Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And we just realized in the chaos of our day, Anthony, we haven't had lunch yet.
Oh, man. No.
So, it's okay. I'll figure it out. Luckily, I'm operating from the home base today for reasons that will become clear in just a little bit. But, yeah, I can go raid my own fridge. It'll be okay. You have to be quick, though. Commercial breaks. Not that long. But coming up at 4:30 today, we have a nice chat with Sean McDonough of ESPN. He's going to join us ahead of tonight's Game 5 between the Capitals and the Canadiens. And then at 5 o'clock, the reason that I'm at home today is because speaking of things that are long, unlike the commercial breaks where I'm going to have to try to figure out how to eat some lunch, Sam Fortier popped by this afternoon, and we recorded a big old long podcast-length chat about the RFK Stadium pursuit, all the ins and outs, all the different things that you want to know. So Sam and I talked for probably 45, 50 minutes, and we're going to chop that up into two pieces for you over the next 2 days on the radio. So you'll hear that part one today at 5 o'clock. We'll also put the full thing uninterrupted on YouTube at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. But part one of our chat is today, 5 o'clock, here on the show. Beyond that, NBA playoffs is probably the big story, Anthony. And, man, you called it yesterday as we were, the Bucks are up big. They're holding on. And you go, they're still going to lose. Why were you so confident? And then we can get to why you were right.
To be honest, like, we talked about it yesterday. Indiana's offense, they've just been clicking on all cylinders. And to be honest, it just took, you know, I guess the last three quarters for that offense to, you know, start to get going. And that's essentially what happened. Also, I think the Bucks, they sort of just ran out of juice, energy at the end of the game. Like, I feel like when you play so many minutes, fatigue eventually starts to kick in. And some of the turnovers that they had late in those games were just, I think it was just fatigue. Because there's no way I can just pass you the ball, you're wide open, and you just lose all types of concentration and the ball just slips through your hands, or you forget that, hey, this is the NBA. You cannot get trapped in the corner on an inbound. And I don't know. I just feel like when you're fatigued, sometimes your mental you forget some
things. you're it's 100% what happens. Yeah. Like your central nervous system, which is the mechanism that connects your brain to your body, it gets tired. It gets fatigued. And when your body is tired, like those signals don't travel as well. They don't get to where they're supposed to be. And like that's science for you. And so, yeah, 1,000%. It's not weakness. It's not like anything other than you've asked your body to do too much and you're out of gas at the end. And that is 1,000% part of this equation of the Bucks just absolutely not only falling apart from the big lead that they had, but they're up 6 with 40 seconds to go.
Eight.
Seven.
8 with 35 seconds.
What was it? What, was it 118, 110?
Oh, no, they were up 7. They were up 7.
I thought it was 118, 111.
Yeah.
So 118, 111, 40 seconds to go, and they blow it overtime, or not even overtime. They go to overtime, and then Halliburton gets the game winner there on getting to his right hand, and everyone just couldn't believe that they led him to his right hand, but that's what happens when you're fatigued. The other guy's better. And I think with the Bucks, the thing that's like mind-blowing is they did this to themselves in so many ways. I get the Dame trade to an extent, and obviously they've been tremendously unlucky with Damian Lillard, but he was also hurt at the end of his career in Portland, and you took that risk. Giving up Jrue Holiday was so dumb. And this is the thing that like kind of blows my mind is I feel like there are so many teams in professional sports that don't understand what make them good. And what made the Bucks a championship level team was, sure, they have one of the best five players in the world playing at the peak of his powers in Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they still do, right? Like Giannis in this series was unbelievable. His numbers were insane, and they still lost. They didn't get swept. It was 3-1 or 4-1, right? Yeah, it was 4-1 by the end of it. So they get a gentleman sweep 4-1, despite the fact that one of the three best players on the planet played like one of the three best players on the planet. But they have no depth. Their scoring is very haphazard, and you can point to Lillard for that. But they used to be great defensively. Great, 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 great. And it was because they had maybe the best defender in the league in Giannis, who can do everything and guard anyone, and the best perimeter defender in the league in Holiday. And they gave up that thing that made them special, especially in the playoffs when the game slows down and it's a little more isolation-y at times, where you could stick Giannis or Holiday on basically anyone. And then they had their schematics let Brook Lopez protect the rim, and they gave that up for more scoring. And I just think that was a very stupid decision. Like at the time, I was like, I get trading for Dame, but I don't like this. I don't think that anytime you Jrue Holiday is leaving your team, that's a bad decision. And I think a team like the Celtics was like, hell yeah, we can get Jrue Holiday. And that is the thing that I think happens in the NBA more than maybe any other league, is teams don't realize who's worth paying for, who's not. And at times, I think, don't even recognize the powers of their own talent. And whether it's ego or whatever, they get rid of Bud despite the fact that he's winning 60 games every year. They get rid of Jrue Holiday, even though he was the second most important player on that championship team. And now they're just a middling Eastern Conference team that is staring down the barrel of a summer where the best thing for their future might be training Giannis Antetokounmpo. I still don't think that's the case. I know there was some articles that were written that's like, this is the only way out. If you're trading Giannis, you're trying to get Giannis back. And maybe it's on a different timeline, and maybe that's worth it. They're just cooked, and they can't maximize the Giannis timeline, so they're better off trading him now versus holding on to him too long. But I would not trade him. There's basically no circumstance where I would trade him. Unless you're telling me that the team with the number, like if the Wizards win the lottery, and the Wizards will give you the number one pick and let you take Cooper Flagg. Okay, now we can listen. Now we have an offer that I'm at least interested in. Outside of that, I don't care how many first round picks I get. Like I'm not interested. I'm trying to build something around Giannis. But they had the thing around Giannis and they let it go. And that was dumb, I guess is my point here.
Did you just pitch Wizards trading potentially number one overall pick too?
I wouldn't do that if I was a Wizards. Like okay, that's all due respect. Like Cooper, if Cooper Flagg is as good as we think that he is. And by the way, I don't think the Wizards, like there's almost no trade where you wouldn't be like, yeah, we'll give that up for Giannis. And then by the same token, like that's the one of the two trades. Like, I wouldn't trade Jokic for Giannis. I wouldn't trade, and that, like, Denver and Milwaukee, because of what he means to those two guys mean to those franchises, they would both say no. Steph Curry, obviously. Like, if you wanted to be really, really cruel, because Steph's 37 and Giannis is like 29, then okay, you could make the argument there, but like, no, because he means too much. It just feels like bad karma. And there's just, there's just not a lot of players where, or not a lot of deals where I'd be like, yeah, I'm not giving that up if I'm getting Giannis in return. The rights to draft Cooper Flagg would be one of them.
Yeah.
I'm just, but if I'm Milwaukee, like the same is true the other way. I'm giving up Giannis for almost like seven picks, like the Kawhi trade, or I should say the Paul George trade.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not interested in that deal because the best thing that happens is I get a Giannis. But if I know that, if I'm pretty sure I'm getting one in Cooper Flagg, that becomes a different conversation. So hopefully that's something we never find out because the Wizards just get that pick and they're like, we're good and everybody can buzz off.
Yep.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. A little bit more on the NBA side of things next. And maybe we'll touch on the Commanders kicker situation as well. They signed Matt Gay. We didn't get a chance to talk about that yesterday. But the Knicks blow a chance to advance last night. Will they grow to regret that? We'll talk about it next here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. And we'll be joined by Sean McDonough coming up at 4:30. Anthony, where'd he go to school?
Should I take a good guess?
You should know, but go ahead and take your guess.
Syracuse University.
That is correct. He's a part of the Mafia.
Oh, yeah.
An OG Don of the Syracuse Mafia. I mean, not really. Like, the OG Don of the Syracuse Mafia was Marty Glickman, who went to school in, like, the 1930s. But, like, of the modern Syracuse Mafia, Sean was there before, like, Tirico, and, like, 10 years before Tirico and Ian were.
So he definitely wouldn't claim the Mafia. Because isn't the Mafia, like, something new? Like, 2010 and on?
No, I mean...
Because I asked Scott Abraham...
It's definitely more older than that.
Okay. All right.
At least I kind of feel like starting with like Tirico and Ian and that crew in the 90s. Okay. And then there's like a good crew in the early 2000s of guys that went into various things. You know, DA, our pal Damon Amendolara, who's dominating on the sports talk scene. He was really good friends with Andrew Catalan, who calls games for CBS, both in the NCAA tournament and for the NFL. I think he was involved in the Masters coverage this year as well and has been for the last couple. Eddie Schroff, play-by-play voice of the Carolina Panthers, who many folks know from ESPN's college football coverage. Like, he was 2004, so... Yeah, there's Danny Parkins from Breakfast Ball on Fox Sports 1, Nick Wright. So that gets us through like 20. Danny was 2010. I'm 2012, along with Kevin Brown, a voice of the Orioles, 2011.
Nick Phil Wright Spalding. Is Syracuse?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Dang. Hey, look, we really do got a mafia.
Yeah, we're around. Anyway, the point is Sean McDonough is going to join us at 4:30. Last night... On the call was Ian Eagle in New York as the Knicks took on the Pistons. And good for the Pistons for closing the game out.
Fine.
Because they certainly look like they were about to... I was like, are you seriously about to blow this game? Are you seriously about to have this for the what feels like the fifth straight game, even though they won one of them? What is it? Defeat snatched from the jaws of victory?
Yep.
But they were able to close it out. And... I mean, there's great shot making from the Knicks down the stretch, but you know they just did enough. And you know the thing is, like Detroit now at 3-2 going home, trying to break the longest home losing streak in the history of the NBA. They lost 9 straight home playoff games, which is an NBA record. And they've been the better team the entire series. They just haven't been able to close out these games. And you know, you see the way that like Asar Thompson's able to get in the paint last night. How many dunks did he have last night?
I don't know. K just kept finding him in the dunker spot, though.
And what are you doing? But the Knicks just have this ability. And whether it's Towns hitting 30-footers, Brunson doing Brunson things, and Mikal Bridges hits this really tough pull-up three, they're able to just keep you within reach and then make crazy big plays late. And the Pistons saved them off, but I would not be surprised at all if the Pistons win game 6 and we're back at Madison Square Garden for a game 7.
I wouldn't be surprised either. I think this series has been so neck and neck, and the fact that you just mentioned they had one victory actually taken away from them because the foul wasn't called, but I think it just shows who this Pistons team is. Like, they're going to fight and claw literally every minute of every game. And yesterday, Cade, you know, he was able to just make some plays down the stretch. And actually, in the fourth quarter, I'm surprised Tom Thibodeau didn't call a timeout. He had Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart sitting out. They had walked to the scores table because both of them got banged up. They went to the locker room. They went to the scores table at 2 minutes. Craig, they didn't enter the game until it was 27 seconds left in the game. Valuable possessions down the stretch that you didn't have your best player on the court, and then also Josh Hart. So I think sort of kind of it was on Tibbs, but shout out to Cade because he was able to make some plays down the stretch. And I'm looking forward to game six. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. I didn't get a chance to watch any of the other games yesterday. Did you watch any of the Nuggets Clippers game last night?
I watched the Celtics and Magic game, and that game just got out of
that
hand.
That got real nasty.
Like Paolo's fifth foul though. Like they even challenged it and all, but him picking up his fifth foul just it was bad. And then the Celtics went on like a 30-9 run to end the third quarter, and just like. That is the Celtics in a nutshell. Like
that's the thing. NBA games are 48 minutes long, and boy, do you feel that. Any team in the league, from the Utah Jazz up to the Boston Celtics, they can compete with any other team. The Utah Jazz can compete with the Boston Celtics for 10 minutes, for 20 minutes, sometimes for 24, sometimes for 36. By the end of 48, especially in a 7-game series, you're going to see who the better team is. And sometimes it doesn't take that long. Sometimes it's what was that? Heat and Cavs the other night.
Yeah, that was ugly.
And it starts bad in the middle and ends somehow even worse, and you lose by 55.
Yeah.
But often it is like this, where it's a pretty close game at halftime. Magic win the first quarter, they're up at halftime, and then they lose the third quarter, 36-13. That's the NBA. As Steve Levy used to say on SportsCenter, everybody makes a run. And then in the nightcap, Clippers Nuggets last night, Nuggets get game five at home, 131-115. They score over 30 in every single quarter of this game, but also defensively, they hold the Nuggets under 25 in the first and third quarters. Jamal Murray, 43 points, 7 assists, 3 steals. Anthony, did you actually get to watch this game, or do you want me to just read more stats from the box score?
Because these
numbers seem rather relevant.
Yeah, I watched the game. I think the numbers will add, you know, some more context to it. But Jamal Murray, he just couldn't miss. Like, big shot after big shot, and they just kept leaving him open. I'm like, dude, like, in big games, he's shown up, and he's been able to deliver. And I think this was a game five, where, you know, he wanted his team to seize control of the series. He stepped up. I would not be surprised though if next game he has a game where he has like 8 points, because that is Jamal Murray.
Sometimes it is like that with him, but as a playoff performer, I feel like he's been fairly consistent. It's just like in the regular season, do you get the best out of him?
No.
Every single night. Heck of a night tonight. I mean, this is the night that TNT has been dreaming of. Because you got the Warriors, Rockets, and Timberwolves, Lakers. We'll get into some of this a little bit more later. But do you think, Anthony, these series extend past tonight?
Yeah, I think the Lakers, they're going to take it one game at a time, just like LeBron did in 2016. Granted, he's not, you know, how many years ago? 9 years ago? So he's not 31. But
sure isn't.
He's going to relay that message to his team. Let's get one. Let's defend home court. And then we'll take it from there. So I think they get game five tonight on their home court.
Yeah, I do as well. I actually kind of think the Rockets might get one tonight as well. But we'll see. If Jimmy seems very ready to be done with old Dylan Buckets there. By the way, I forgot about this from the Pacers game. Mr. Haliburton.
That was crazy.
What are you doing? What is wrong with people, Anthony? In case you missed it, Tyrese Halliburton's dad, and again, we'll get into more preview of the Warriors, Rockets, and T-Wolves, Lakers later on in the show, but Tyrese Halliburton's dad is like taunting Giannis after the game. Like, get off the court. You're a player's dad. Your son's a grown adult, and that man's an NBA champion. And I have to give a ton of credit to Tyrese Halliburton, because Tyrese Halliburton is asked about it afterwards, and he's like, yeah, my dad was wrong there. Pop stepped out. That wasn't cool. And, like, good for Tyrese, but just, like, that's absolutely ridiculous behavior from a grown adult.
Yeah, I don't like when parents try to make the moment about themselves. Like, I like the way Kevin Durant's mom goes about it. She's on the sideline, like, just clapping up her son.
Shouts out to Wanda, the real MVP.
But, yeah, people going on the court, making the moment about themselves. That's how you steal away a moment from yourself. Like, your son literally just hit a game winner. He's on the scores table. That's where your attention should be, not on in Giannis's face, who's a champion, who has, you know, one of those rings that your son wants. So it's just like, wrong person to be talking trash to.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was to whoever else on the Bucks, like, yeah, it makes it extra stupid that it's Giannis, because you're like, buddy, you know who that is? Like, he's an MVP, he's a champion, he's everything your son wants to be. And, you know, Tyrese would be the first person to say that. But just, your dad. Like, congrats, you did a great job with your kid. Like, as a basketball player, he's doing quite well. Mm-hmm. Whatever you contributed genetically and in raising him, like, excellent work out of you. You sit on the sidelines. Get off the court. Get off the court. All right, when we get back, Capitals. They take the ice tonight, looking to end their round one series with the Canadiens. The game is not only on Monumental Sports Network, it's also on ESPN, which means we can talk about it with ESPN's Sean McDonough. He joins us in 3 minutes on the Team 980.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Of course, we are on YouTube as well at the Team 980 if you'd like to watch the show. And if you'd like to watch the Capitals tonight, of course, you have the great Joe B on Monumental Sports Network locally. Or if you want the national broadcast, Sean McDonough on the play-by-play. And Sean joins us now. Sean, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy to be with you. How are you today?
Doing great. It's an exciting day. Caps can obviously close this out, and it's been an interesting series. Series has been tight, but ultimately the Capitals a 3-1 here. What do you think the biggest difference in this series has been? The Caps' ability to close out these games and ultimately give themselves a little bit of padding here going into Game 5?
Yeah, I think it's been a very close series. I was just sitting here reading some of the articles preparing for the game tonight. Caden Gooley, the defenseman from Montreal, said, you know, he feels like they could have won every game, and you could make an argument for that. Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing is just, in my opinion, Washington has the better team. You know, obviously they were considerably better in terms of the point totals in the regular season, winning the President's Trophy. I just think they have a little more depth. You know, they can rely on other lines other than their top line for scoring, and I think that'll be enhanced if they get Alexi Protas back in the series, which will be, you know, a big part of the storyline tonight, whether or not he's able to go. And, you know, Montreal really relies very heavily on that first line with Suzuki between Slavkovsky and Caulfield. You know, it's a terrific line, but I think they need to get more from the other players. So, yeah, I think Washington's the bigger team, more physical team. Think they're the more talented team, and, you know, ultimately that's why they're finding a way to win the closer games.
obviously, when those top lines are out there facing off against each other, we've seen the impact Tom Wilson has had. And Tom's career, I think everyone in D.C., especially Caps fans, know, like, guy that kind of started off as a rough and tumble, a protector, somewhere between, goon or whatever you want to say. And then you knew he could develop into far more than that. And then he became top line Tommy here, where he is a guy that they rely upon. And his ability to keep his cool, stay in the moment, obviously still be ultra physical, and that fight that spills over into the benches in game four. But what have you made of Wilson's maturity over the years and maturation as a player, as a person, as a leader, and how that's impacted this series?
Yeah, I think you really hit on it in what you just said. He's become, to me, one of the best, most impactful players in the league. He's the only player in the league in the regular season with 30 or more goals and 200 or more hits. So that's a pretty special package of skills. So, he's a 33-goal scorer. He helps you on the power play a lot. And obviously, he has set the tone for the physicality in this series. And it's all the playoff series, it seems to me, have been really physical. But, the hit on Carrier the other night, I think, stands out among every other hit in any of these eight series in the first round. And I'm guessing that Carrier is not going to play tonight. So, he's a big part of their success. And, he's just not a physical guy anymore. He's a really talented power forward who helps you in every zone in the rink.
Sean McDonough with us, of course, play-by-play for ESPN. They've got the game tonight, Game 5, Capitals, Canadiens. You can check that out also on the radio side over on 106.7 The Fan. If you're driving home, then flip on Sean and company when you get there. So, Sean...
Joe Beninati, the great Joe Beninati. He's awesome.
Of course.
Locker's awesome. I hope we get Locker back tonight. They're one of the great broadcast teams in the NHL. I think they're as good as anybody, and Capital fans are really blessed. And I think they've been together now for almost 30 years, and great information, great chemistry. They're the whole package. So I totally understand. People like their own hometown announcers. We love them to watch ESPN, but we certainly are understanding if at least they give a peek to Joe and Locker every now and then.
Of course. I mean, we love our hometown announcers when they're as good as Joe B and Locker. And so
they're
best.
They really are. I watch all these, when preparing for these games throughout the year, you watch a lot of the local. Remember, I watched Joe and Alan May, their broadcast of game four this morning preparing. And part of the reason you do it is, Joe has so much great information that I'm sitting here busily scribbling away and writing down notes from his preparation. So, and he's been a great resource over the last, we've been back in the NHL for 4 years now. And anytime we have a Caps game, Joe is exceedingly generous with his time and sharing his knowledge and information. And I really think I said this to him not too long ago, that he'll someday win the Foster Hewitt Award, be in the broadcasters part of the Hockey Hall of Fame, because he's one of the greats of this era.
He deserves it. But there's no like chippiness like there is on the ice. You guys are tired of seeing each other. You don't give Joe a little bump in the hallway as you pass him on the way to your respective booths.
Joe.
Okay.
All right. He's one of the few broadcasters in the NHL I'm actually a little bit bigger than, too. So,
you guys
did get physical in the hallway. I'd like my chances.
Who was it? Hudson and Leonard the other night that just kind of held hands and said, if this thing goes down, we're gonna soft punch each other in the chest. That's you and Joe.
Yeah. And you know what? That's interesting, right? Because being a Bostonian, that's Boston College and Boston University, which is as heated and spirited a rivalry as there is in college hockey. So it's nice that they could hold hands and sing kumbaya. I'm sure that didn't happen during their college days.
No, and I'm sure some of their former college teammates weren't thrilled about it either. But we can figure that or save that for another day. Sean McDonough is with us here on the Hoffman Show. Obviously, the biggest question going into Game 4, Sean, was would Logan Thompson play? And if so, how would he play? How do you think that he played? Obviously, the Caps got the win. And how concerning is this injury potentially looming and affecting him tonight and on through what we hope is a long Caps playoff run?
Yeah, I think he played well, and he really didn't show any lingering impact from the collision that took him out of the previous game. So, I would say, based on that tape I just referenced, I watched, that he's fine. I don't think they would have put him out there if he wasn't, especially with such an excellent option like Lindgren. So, I assume he's fine. Obviously, the bigger goaltending question is on the other side, because it doesn't sound like Sam Montembeau is going to play tonight, and Although I think, you know, Dobesh has been very good in the games he's played in and is a really excellent backup himself and has, you know, proven to be a talented guy. So I don't think there's really been much drop-off in the goaltending on either side.
The last time the Capitals won a playoff series was the one in Las Vegas where they won the Stanley Cup back in 2018, which is wild to think about. That one, that was somehow already 6 years ago, and two, that they haven't figured out how to get one win in a playoff series since, considering some of the teams that they've had. But we also know that in the NHL, closing out series is incredibly difficult. In any sport, the sense of desperation a team has with their backs against the wall is real. So what is the thing that you're going to be looking for Washington to try to set the tone, or for Montreal tonight to make sure that they don't to switch sports here, wind up like what the Miami Heat did the other night, where they just like, okay, we're done here and lay down? What are some of the early first period kind of indicators you're looking for tonight to see the intensity, the level, the ability to close for Washington in this game five?
Well, I do think it's important. And I do think, you know, as we're chatting, it's one of the interesting aspects of whether or not Protas plays, because, you know, he's been practicing now for several days. It looks like if he's not ready, he's really close. So, you know, if you're the Caps, do you put him out there? Because, as you said, you know, when you have a chance to bury a team, you should go ahead and bury him, because you never know what might happen. Should Montreal win tonight? I mean, we saw Ottawa win last night in Toronto, down 3-1, and now there's a lot of pressure on the Maple Leafs, particularly, you know, as this goes back to Ottawa for game six, especially given their history. So part of me would say, yeah, if Protas can play, he should play, because they're a better team with him, and he was one of the best players in the league this year, and try to end this series. The other part of me thinks, well, you know, they win tonight, they're going to have some days off here before the next round starts, so maybe you give them 3 or 4 or 5, however many days it's going to turn out to be, more days, because it sounds like it was a very significant skate cut. And let him really be raring to go when the Carolina series rolls around. So, but I do think it's another reason why it's important. I mean, Carolina ended its series last night. So, you know, I think it's incumbent upon the Caps to end theirs tonight. So the rest situation is similar. You know, if you wind up going to 6 games or 7 games with Montreal and, you know, get even more banged up, I think they would be at a competitive disadvantage starting the next series with Carolina.
And we know that Carolina's been a thorn in Washington's side all year, a year where they were the best team in the East, but Carolina seemed to have their number more than a time or two. Last thing for Sean McDonough here, of course, play-by-play on ESPN. They've got the game tonight, game five between the Capitals and the Canadiens. Sean, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Ovechkin on the way out here. You've obviously, as you just said, ESPN's been back in the NHL for about 4 years now, covering the games, and you've certainly been a fan longer. You've seen Alex's entire career, and we see the record this year. What's it been like getting to know him the last couple of years, covering some of the games, and what was your reaction to the record-breaking goal that he scored in the record that he now holds as the NHL's all-time leading goal scorer that he attained this season?
Yeah, it's awesome. Obviously, you know, it's been a big part, you know, really the biggest part, I think, of this National Hockey League regular season was the Grade 8 chase, and people were caught up in it. And I think, you know, when he broke his leg there in the middle of the season and missed 16 games or so, a lot of us thought, well, you know, he's not going to do it this year. But, you know, to go out and score as many goals as he did in the sample of games that he played in, the limited number of games, you know, and that's been one of the great things about his career, is he's been so durable and missed so few games, which is even more remarkable when you consider how physical he is and has been, again, in this series, you know, really set the physical tone in the first couple of games. So, it's remarkable. Yeah, I worried about it last year, to be quite honest. You know, I thought the beginning of last year, you kind of wondered, you know, is he coming to the end? It didn't look like he was in particularly good shape. And, you know, I think he might have even played his way into shape as the season went along. I know Spencer Carberry talked to him at the end of last season about, you know, coming back really ready to go from day one of this season. And he did, you know, so he's phenomenal, one of the great players of all time, obviously, in addition to the goal scoring. And, you know, I'm looking forward to watching them play throughout the rest of these playoffs as long as they go. I think they have about as good a chance as anybody to win the whole thing.
Well, if they do make that deep run, hopefully, Sean, we'll be talking to you again. Appreciate your time here on Game Day.
After the first round, the great Joe Beninati and Monumental Sports, you know, they're no longer, which is, I feel bad for them, because I feel bad the local teams can't go beyond the first round. So, you're stuck with us. So
You know, Sean, though, maybe Joe will have time for us.
My decision. You know, we love Joe. We love Locker. We love their team. But yeah, after this round, you're stuck with us.
Yeah. Well, we love having you on, but maybe Joe will have time for us, and maybe we'll bug him and let you focus on the games.
Is Joe, big time you. Am I going to take back all the nice things I said about Joe?
He's been on the show quite a bit, just not this playoffs. I think he's a busy man, and other people seem to be getting to him first. So I'll just go yell at my producer. No, I'm not going to do that. Anthony's a lovely young man, and he's doing a great job. Sean, thank you for the time. Really appreciate it, and we will certainly hopefully talk to you down the line as the Caps continue to go here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Coming up at 5 o'clock, Sam Fortier with the latest on the Commanders' move to RFK and a bigger picture retrospective as well on how we got to where we are now and where we still have to go, part of a larger conversation that Sam and I had over there on my couch earlier today here in the home studio. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well, on the free Odyssey app. And it was like right before actually Sam and I started taping, Anthony, that our phones went off and we saw the news that Jeff Ulbrich and the Falcons have both been fined for the prank call to Shedeur Sanders. Also, a lot of dudes got prank called. Abdul Carter said he got it. Josh Connerly told G&D yesterday that he got one. So there's a lot, but the Jax Ulbrich version is the one that got Shedeur. And it's so dumb. And it's the kind of thing that a dumb 21-year-old does. And it's a reminder that 21-year-olds are mostly dumb. Even those of us that thought we were pretty smart at 21, we were probably pretty dumb. Your prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed yet. And the things that you think are fun are just stupid. And your ability to assess risk and interpret what the impact you have on others, not developed. And so that makes Jack Ulbrich a 21-year-old who had access to information he shouldn't, and also someone who grew up in the social media age who thought that this would be fun to tape and put out on the internet and like, this will be funny. It's like, no, you absolute moron. You will get like, if you're trying to do something funny, that's coy. The whole idea is you don't get caught. And the fact that he did not even think that getting caught would be consequential tells you exactly who we're dealing with here. But Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, and of course, if you're sort of like, what are you talking about? Shedeur Sanders got prank called on draft day by Jax Ulbrich, the 21-year-old son of Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator and former Jets interim head coach Jeff Ulbrich. Ulbrich gets fined $100,000. Falcons get fined $250,000. That seems very, like, almost unfair to the Falcons. Also, Anthony, have you ever cost Big Tony $100,000? In one shot?
Nah, I would never put myself in a position.
The closest I've come is when I said, hey, Dad, I'm going to Syracuse. Tuition. Bang.
Yeah.
At least I got an education out of it. And it led to Sean McDonough being on the show in the last segment. So take that.
Nah, this was an insane incident. And I just couldn't believe they put it on Twitter and was like just eager to reveal it to the public. Like, you guys are going to get caught. Like, it's going to get, like, back to you guys somehow, some way.
That funny and, like, that not bad that they told on themselves. Yeah. That was so funny because, like, the NFL's like, we're going to launch an investigation. And it's like, of what? They put it on the internet.
Yeah.
You don't need Sherlock Holmes to figure that one out.
Yeah, I didn't get that. But definitely a cruel thing to do. And the fact other people were getting prank called as well. Like, Josh Connor, he wasn't the first. Like, I think they did that to Shedeur on day two, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure it was day two.
Well, that's my question. Did Jax Ulbrich do everybody, or is this just was he just Shador's? And how are these dudes' numbers all getting out?
Everybody.
I know Shedeur changed his number.
No, he just wanted to go buy an entirely new phone strictly for this process, guys.
Right, and exactly. So he had a private number that only the GMs and coaches and teams were supposed to have, and that's why it was so bad. But Ulbrich had to apologize today. And the thing is, like, this is so over the top to me, My actions of not protecting confidential data were inexcusable. Obrich said at a news conference at the Falcons facility. My son's actions were absolutely inexcusable, and for that, we are both deeply sorry. Earlier in the day, the NFL fined the Falcons $250K, Obrich $100K in response to the situation. Like, Jax Obrich is a 21-year-old kid, and he stole a number off his dad's iPad. Like, I don't, it's not like, I don't know. Like, the idea, confidential data. If you leave your phone out in your own home, are you not doing enough to protect confidential data in this context? Like, it just seems like, I know the NFL has to be mad at someone. Mm-hmm. And I feel probably the NFL feels extra sensitive about Shador right now because there's a lot of people saying a lot of stuff about why he fell and whatever. But sometimes it's okay to just be like, this is a dumb kid who did a dumb thing. And, you know, and I don't want to say a dumb kid. I don't know Jax Obrich. It's a kid. So I'm going to be the adult in the room. He's a kid who did a dumb thing. And he apologized, and Jeff Obrich should apologize on behalf of his son. Jax Obrich has apologized publicly and to Shador personally. And this whole thing is, it just feels like it's being made into a bigger deal than it actually is. And in that way, it kind of annoys me. And I'm not going to get too mad at, you know, it sucks for Jeff Obrich, but he's made a decent amount of money as a coach over his career. And it, Arthur Blank and the Falcons, like, they got a bunch of money, and the NFL's fines go to charity. So, who cares? It's not my money, but it just, in some ways, it feels like this is being made into a lot bigger deal than it is, because a kid pulled a dumb prank on essentially another kid, and we're getting mad at that. Like, in some ways, I don't know. I guess it's just, it feels like in some ways Jeff Ulbrich's being fined for being a bad dad more so than he is not protecting confidential data.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't know if that's fair to Jeff Obrich because his son's an adult. He's 21 years old.
Yeah, I think at some point, like, the son, he apologized, but like, it's too late. Like, you should have known that your actions were gonna possibly potentially fall back on your dad. Like, inexcusable. But I feel bad for Jeff because he sort of kind of didn't bring this on himself.
No, I mean, look, if you, depending on what he is, it was his father, but like, we don't have insight into that.
Yeah.
But the, I didn't protect confidential data when your son like stole the number off your iPad, seems dumb. As for Shador, his comments to Cleveland reporters, it didn't really have an impact on me because it was just like, I mean, okay, I don't feed into the negativity or I don't feed into that stuff. You've seen on his brother's YouTube video, my reaction to it. I think, of course, it's childish. Of course, I feel like it was a childish act, but everyone does childish things here and there.
That dude, Craig, when I tell you that dude has a lot of like patience and the fact he doesn't, you know, overreact, I got to tip my hat to him because me, I would have been upset. I don't know. To be honest, I don't even know how I would have reacted, but I know I wouldn't have been that calm, that cool, that collected.
Yeah. I mean, Shador's got a lot of eyes on him. Yeah. And he's had a lot of eyes on him. He's used to it, which, you know, could be actually very helpful to him as an NFL quarterback. We'll see how people around him handle it. And by that, I mean the quarterback stuff, not necessarily how he handled this situation. All right. That's it. That's all. For that, when we get back, top story of the day, still the Commanders' pursuit of RFK. That's going to be a big story for us over the next 3 months, 2.5 months until July when the city council votes on this. So, let's talk about it with Sam Fortier, Washington Post, who's been covering this thing from go, next on the Team 980. It's Hoffman's show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and we're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. We're leading you into Nats baseball, so shorter show today. We're done at 6:15. We'll talk a little NBA. On the way out, preview the night's games. We'll also get into our non-Commanders-related draft thoughts, winners and losers. What do we call them, Anthony? We don't like winners and losers because we don't know who's winning and losing a draft for years. But hat tips and head scratchers, I think, is what what we decided we're going to call that. So we got hat tips and head scratches coming up at 5:30. But right now, I had the great fortune of the lovely and talented Sam Fortier coming over, to my house where I have, many microphones, and we sat down in front of two of them and discussed the RFK situation for the Commanders. And we started off by kind of peeling back and relooking at how we got to this point, which is where we will start the conversation. And then in part two of our conversation that you'll hear tomorrow, we get into some of the biggest questions moving forward. The full thing will be available uninterrupted in our podcast feed, and will also be available on YouTube at Greg Hoffman and at the Team 980. But part one of my chat with Fortier right now is today's edition of Not My Beat.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Why was this a story that you wanted to cover? As someone who, you know, obviously the Commander's beat, this is a huge story. You guys have so many different people at the post that can do football and non-football things around this team, and you have been on this story from go. What is so fascinating to you about this that you wanted to sink your teeth in and be a part of it?
Craig, I appreciate you asking, man. Like, it's just something that 3 years ago, I remember, you know, they started talking about Prince William County and we're going to go down there. You know, this was under the Snyder ownership. I just, like, it was my assignment one day, and I kind of got fascinated unspooling the thread of the intersection of business, politics, and sports. I think really interests me because it's like, okay, we're talking about the mayor's budget and how much taxpayers are going to have to pay. And I know that a lot of people are like, that is so boring. Please don't talk to me about that. But to me, that is just as fascinating as like Terry McLaurin, how do you stack a receiver and or how do you stack a DB and like win the hand fighting early so you can win down the field late? It's just how things work, and it being a field that I was not, you know, super familiar with, it was like, you know, you'd read one article and then you'd be like, wait. So I'd ask a couple sources like, hey, am I reading this right? And then it just like keeps building and building.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm like reading books, and then it's like about stadium stuff. And then it's like, I'm talking about the tax code. And then I like feel like I really have a good understanding of the ballpark fee, which is going to be like a huge funding stream that pays for this stadium. And it's like, oh, I just like.
And next thing you know, you're on Capitol Hill.
And exactly. And then you're like in these meeting rooms and you're like, you know, AOC is walking by or Steve Daines is walking by, and you're like, oh, like these are the people who are like, you know, making real decisions for like our country. And it's just, I don't know, like as a journalism nerd, like trying to figure things out, it just was a challenge and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I am a political junkie. Like, I enjoy listening to, you know, podcasts or reading stuff about what's going on. And so I think it's important because it explains how the world works. And I think this is one where you take some of the traditional left-right out of it in a lot of ways, especially in a city like DC, where everybody's got a D next to their name anyway, and there's still everyone fighting. And it's like, oh, nope, same interpersonal, same like whatever, but this is not necessarily a traditional left-right thing. And I think because of that too, with our current political climate being so antagonistic, like it allows you to talk about this stuff and look at it in a way that if this was, I mean, even when it was still in Congress, like you put out something and then there go the comments because everyone's favorite or least favorite politician is involved. And now that it's in the city council, like, I think we really get to see how this legislative sausage is made. And I think that's going to be interesting, eye-opening, and hopefully not terribly disappointing for us over the next 3 months with the negotiations between the team, the mayor, and the city council.
No, absolutely. And it's like how the world works is the perfect way to put it, because to me, it's like, wait, you know, the city council chairman is a Democrat, Phil Mendelson, and the mayor is a Democrat, Muriel Bowser. Why are they
Why
so
do
at
they
odds?
Hate each other?
And also, like, the mayor is working with James Comer, like the Republican chair of the House Oversight Committee, that's talking about DC's crime bill. Like, how did she forge an alliance with a guy that is like theoretically like interfering in city affairs? And so, like, you all like. Obviously, I know the answer is politics, but what, like, where do they see the advantage in each other was like really fascinating to me to try to demystify. And that, like, her ability to work with Comer was obviously the key. And Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced the bill bipartisan, but it's like, we are not talking about the Commanders coming home to DC unless you zoom all the way out. And really, like, back to even when Dan Snyder started having these conversations in 2008, like, this is a story to me that's like three decades in the making. And it's a thing that so many people care so much about. Like, when the announcement happened, I know a lot of Commanders fans. Like, that's who I've been writing about for so long. It's like the emotion that people felt and the enthusiasm people felt, it's like, I feel like I just have a much greater appreciation of how we got here because I was able to dig in like that.
For sure. And I think that the joy that people felt this season for those that went to games at RFK back in the day, like, there is some element of nostalgia here that is definitely influencing, which I thought was hilarious at the press conference. Because you might have asked the question even about Harris and nostalgia. Was that you who asked that?
No,
or was
it
somebody else?
It wasn't me. It was someone else. But so, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so he was like, Harris is asked, is nostalgia playing a role here, basically? And he goes, no, and then lists a bunch of things that absolutely fall under the category of nostalgia. And the thing is, though, I feel like with nostalgia, there is an inherent untruth to it. It's like, it's glossy. Your memory is glossier than the reality was. When everyone says the exact same thing, and you have the video to back it up, and you see the stands bouncing, and like opposing players, home players, were like, that was the hardest place to play, or the best place to play if you were wearing the burgundy and gold back then. Like, it's just, I understand why it means so much to so many people. And then that's the best memory compounded by the 25 years of the Snyder era and no joy basically outside of 2012. And then you have this past year and it just feels like so many things are going in the right direction. But it is like all that, those good feelings aren't going to be what gets this done. It's going to be the nitty gritty inside deal making and satisfying this politician in Ward 7 and this politician in Ward 5. And what can, and so much of politics is that, right? Like, what can I get for my people? Which I think gets to, or like, what can I do to satisfy my one core belief that made me run for office in the first place? Right. And I feel like that particular thing is like, that's the James Comer angle of this. Like, James Comer is an actual dyed in the wool, red, right wing, not right wing, like, you know, whatever, like right wing economically, small government Republican. And he looked at the RFK site and said, we're paying for this to do nothing. And that's how Mayor Bowser was able to find the common ground. And I'm curious if there's any other things like from those types of relationships that you saw her work or other things that are either untold or undertold that you thought were interesting from that process. And then we can kind of get to what was announced Monday and where we go from here.
Yeah, I think like so my colleagues, Megan Flynn, Aaron Cox, and Paul Kane, you know, a bunch of us at the Post did like a TikTok, we call it, not like TikTok the app, but TikTok like the
TikTok
the
Sammy over here. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a Post, an actual print article that's done chronologically.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's just, when you look back, like her ability to reach across the aisle and figure out that relationship with Comer, and then really like to get everyone on board along the way, because they passed it. I think people should understand they used a vehicle called unanimous consent, which is basically like on the last day of Congress, they put up all these bills that are like super non-controversial. Like, should we rename a post office in Mason, Ohio? Just things that would pass 100-0. And when they didn't get in like the spending bill at the end of the year, they had to pass 100-0. And if you think about like how complicated and messy and fraught this had been for so long, the idea of it passing 100-0 was far-fetched. It was ludicrous. And so on the last night, you know, you figure out, okay, Steve Daines from Montana, like we have worked with the Wetzel, the Native American family that's credited with designing the logo. Like, you're good. Maryland, who's had a lot of exceptions to this, you're good. Like, figuring out all of those pieces, and that took everybody. It was a coalition of the mayor's office, of the team, of the NFL, of, you know, senators themselves. You know, Chuck Schumer reads it at 1:15 a.m. or whatever it was, and he says, like, is anyone opposed? And then no one says anything, and it passes. That's just an incredible moment that, to me, is the political version of Jaden Daniels dropping back and throwing a Hail Mary.
Yeah. I mean, I remember waking up the next morning and just looking at, like, staring at my phone, being like, I'm sorry, what happened? Like, it was dead. I went to bed last night, and it was dead. And here we are. And now, all of a sudden, that's what, 3-4 months ago at this point, President Biden signs that into legislation. Josh Harris, Roger Goodell are there. Administration changes. And then here we are now with the land in D.C.'s hands. And it was something that I actually wanted to try to understand on our radio show. So Sam and I are taping this on Wednesday, April, what is it, 30th?
30th.
So this would have been yesterday. I had Tom Sherwood, the great Tom Sherwood from WAMU on, who is just legendary political analyst in the city. And I was basically like, you've got Phil Mendelson, the D.C. City Council chair, complaining that, like, I haven't been involved in anything. Like, is this the normal process? Because it would seem like you'd want to work with the mayor's office and city council to do this. And he's like, no, this is actually like how this goes. The mayor does stuff, puts together proposals, and then they'll work on city council. But there's also been some reporting that maybe there has been some more contact between the team and city council, et cetera. So from the time that that bill passes to Monday's announcement, what was happening that you've been able to, that you either were privy to along the way and kind of keeping track of quietly in your notebook, to stuff that you figured out and along with Megan and your team over the last couple of days? What was the process to get from, we got this approved, we're standing in the Oval Office watching former President Biden sign it, to Monday's press announcement?
Yeah, I mean, they had been discussing, you know, a framework of a deal, like just getting their ducks in a row before that. But I mean, they had been talking to Maryland and D.C. It was between D.C. and Maryland. Like, Virginia is not in play at all. But they're talking to both jurisdictions, and I think, you know, things move pretty rapidly after that signing. You know, we're here just 3 months later. And so I think it's just a conversation of, like, okay, who gets what at what site? What does it look like? How do we do the parking? You know, who gets development rights over this area? How does that area look? It's just, those are all of the things that you're ironing through. And, you know, at some point, everybody has to present their best and final offer. We don't have the details on the Maryland offer. Westmore said they made a great offer, as you know, you'd expect an executive to say. We don't have the details on that. But DC obviously comes in with an offer that, to taxpayers, in the end, like if you sort through all the numbers, DC taxpayers will put in just over $1 billion in the end. What did Maryland come in at? I would be, you know, that's obviously something fascinating, because what is the gap between what they're willing to accept? I mean, obviously Maryland has a lot more people, has a much bigger budget, but the pull of DC obviously is very strong emotionally. The fans, you know, we did some polling last April that, you know, fans, Washingtonians, and then district residents in particular, and Commanders fans in particular, wanted the team to end up here rather than in suburban Maryland or Northern Virginia. And so Josh Harris and his crew get to a point where they have an announcement. And I would say real quick, because I was doing a Q&A with some of our subscribers earlier, and people were like, hey, what are the odds this ends up like the Ted Leonsis deal to go to Virginia? Because here we are with, you know, a pep rally-esque press conference between an executive and a sports team owner. Like, why is this one not going to fall apart? And I would say two big reasons. One, Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser have signed an agreement. There is a term sheet. Actually, Craig, I brought something.
Oh, Sam's got props, everybody.
I have props. I brought the term sheet. I brought all of the documents that the mayor's office has put out about this. And so, and you know, I've gone through, I've highlighted, so people can see, like, this is, you know,
that's a real legal document
it's,
there.
Yeah, it's real. So, and so I would point out that, unlike, not that, you know, this means everything, but, like, Josh Harris's signature is on this page and Muriel Bowser's signature is on this page. There was never a signed document between Leonsis and Youngkin. And I would also say that Ted Leonsis had put a lot of money into the area surrounding Cap One Arena downtown. You know, like, they have the Monumental Sports Network TV studios. Right. There's a bunch of different things they've done down there. And I think that Northwest Stadium is a clearly worse fallback option for Josh Harris than Cap One would have been for Ted Leonsis. And so
I actually don't think, for whatever it's worth, I don't think I think Monumental pulled a Virginia thing to get DC to the table. And that might have been a feature, not a bug, of not having a signed agreement.
I disagree with that. Like, going through the whole reporting process, I don't think that's the case. But obviously, like, they ended up with something that they wanted anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser are both very committed to making this happen. And so that's not to say that, like, so basically to me, the question is, can someone on the DC council or another grassroots organization in the city pull a Louise Lucas, the Virginia state senator, who single-handedly basically tanked that deal? Can someone do that in this case? And I don't know.
Well, obviously they're going to vote on it. Mendelsohn, even though he's the chair, like, he can't just be like, oh, I'm not bringing it up for a vote. So they're going to vote on this. July is the current imposed deadline that probably holds. But, you know, Mendelsohn's already like, well, it's not enough time to go through it. And the thing is, now, you know, this term sheet, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's going to change. Like, the thing is that now the negotiations start with city council. And this is where things get fun in terms of, okay, we want the current plan is parking spaces that ultimately become parking structures. Well, I've already heard one city council member, Charles Allen, tell Grant Danny yesterday that he doesn't like the way that those are done, where the Commanders are going to keep all the money. He's like, no, we should get to keep that money because we're going to own them through Events DC. Like, that seems like a reasonable ask. And that seems like also the kind of thing that you build in if you are Josh Harris to be like, if for some reason they don't pick up on this, like, we'll keep it. But if not, maybe that's a concession we can make. There are going to be certain red lines where it's like, no, that's how it's got to be. There's going to be other things that are negotiable. As you've gone through this stuff, what are some of the things that stand out to you as maybe the most contentious pieces that will be discussed and perhaps tweaked over the next 3 months as city council and the Commanders and the mayor's office all try to come together on a deal that gets 7 votes on city council?
The number one most contentious thing is going to be just over $1 billion of taxpayer money, because when you look at the comparison, I know that, you know, other jurisdictions have done more, but and I know that, you know, their big talking point is $2.7 billion from the team is the largest private investment in the city's history, and I know that that's their big talking point, but I still think that there are some council members, Charles Allen included, who say, like, why are we spending $1 billion? Like, why are taxpayers spending $1 billion? And that's still going to be an issue. Phil Mendelson, the chairman, has long said, we would love the stadium there. We would love development there. But I do not support taxpayer funding for a stadium. And a lot of people say, like, why should I give a tax break to a billionaire? That's going to be the number one contention. And then also, I would say probably second is, you know, how many events does a football stadium have? We need more housing in this city. And, you know, the Commanders are going to come back with, hey, the stadium only takes up 16% of the site. It's a large site. It's 177 acre site. Like, that's going to be, I think, the fight. And ultimately, it's going to be up to the council and the citizens to decide, like, is this worth it? Because I think that, like, the thing is that a lot of people understand that stadiums in general, stadiums specifically, football stadiums, do not deliver the economic return that the studies say they do. Or, you know,
the city funded
studies find, yeah. Right? But, you know, I've seen, like, in the chat, I've gotten emails about it. Like, there are some citizens who say it is worth the cost because this will be a national stadium. If DC wants to be a big time stadium, why are we having the World Cup here and there's no games played in the nation's capital? Like, that's embarrassing. And so, you know, I think that it's really just going to come down to what can the city council accept, what will citizens accept, and that's going to be a huge sticking point to me.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the team at 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And again, part two of our conversation with Sam Fortier will be tomorrow at 5 o'clock, where we discuss more about what's next, and also some of the kind of football-y questions. A lot of football fans, as well as just DC, like, there's the DC residents. Everyone cares about what city council is doing, or, you know, could care, I guess. And there's the stuff like, hey, I go to games, which obviously is a large part of our audience, you sports radio listener. But that element of tailgating and PSLs and all that kind of stuff we get into as well in part two. So that'll be tomorrow here on the Hoffman Show. Thanks again to Fortier for joining us. So coming up next, Anthony, we are going to hit our hat tips and head scratchers for the first round, or not the first round, the 2025 NFL draft in total. We did some of this on Friday last week because we had the whole first round to look at, but now we have the full draft. And yesterday we went through one thought from each team's first round, but we haven't had a chance to look totally at the league yet. And I think that's what we should do next. So we obviously have our own list, but I think we should also take nominees from the people.
I like that idea.
Yeah, we don't. 5:30, not a time we take calls often. So you 5 o'clock hour listeners on your drive home throughout the DMV, or if you're already home watching on YouTube and you want to get involved in the show, you can leave your hat tips and head scratchers in the chat on YouTube or give us a call, 301-230-0980. We don't do winners and losers for the draft because it's just there's no way to know right now who's won and lost, but we have an idea. We have thoughts, obviously, based off what we thought going into the draft. So who are the teams that you're like, hey, I see you. Nice job with your draft. You give them a nice little hat tip. And there's the teams that you're just like, man, what is you doing? Head scratchers. That's the question. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. We'll take your calls
next on the Hoffman Show.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. The 2025 NFL Draft is in the books, and it always takes a couple of days to digest everything that goes on in it. And so we are now finally at the point, Anthony, where we can look beyond just the Commanders and beyond just the first round, and we can look at the draft as a whole for everybody. And we are going to do that in the form of a, I guess it's a new segment, but it's one that I like. We're calling it Head Scratchers and Hat Tips. I actually kind of like that. I think that flows better. Hat tips and head scratchers, or head scratchers and hat tips? I think the latter.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, so now that we got that straightened out.
Head scratchers, hat tips.
Yeah, for sure. So with that said, we got head scratchers and hat tips. Anthony, I'll give you the first pick of the draft here. One, do you want a head scratcher or a hat tip? Or two, which team would you like to talk about their 2025 NFL draft?
One of the teams I like thoroughly, their draft anyway, the Chargers. I think the Chargers sort of counted. I mean, if we're not talking about the Commanders, because I like the Commanders draft as well. But if I'm looking outside of the Commanders, I would say the Chargers. And simply for the fact, I think they did what, you know, the Commanders did in terms of building around the young quarterback. Now, Herbert, he has a few more years of experience.
And a lot more dollars on the contract because of that. He's already been paid.
Yeah, but they just waited too late to finally surround this guy with some offensive talent. I think the talent that was there when he was on his rookie contract was sort of old. They were aging. They were injury riddled. So they didn't necessarily help his success. But now you got Ladd McConkey from last year's draft. And then this year you go with Omarion Hampton, who I'm pretty sure Jim Harbaugh is going to love just because of the style of play that they play. And then they also went out and got Trey Harris. Yep.
Yeah.
Big receiver. And then also, you know, he's a bigger receiver, not the fastest, but they also got another guy in Keandre Lambert Smith, who's a speed guy, ran a 4.3 40. So I think in terms of just surrounding that offense and, you know, helping Justin Herbert, I really like what they did.
There's also one other player that you have to mention, Anthony. Who they take at 165 overall?
I don't have him on here.
Aronde Gadsden II.
From Cuse.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that. Yeah. He's nasty.
He can go.
He was our guy.
Yeah, so they got a receiving tight end as well. And the thing is, on the edge, like Kyle Kinnard's a guy that a lot of people like, the edge out of South Carolina, Jamari Caldwell, defensive tackle out of Oregon, Derek Harmon's running mate there. So they got an offensive lineman. They had a ton of picks. And so they were able to address pretty much everything. But the fact that it starts with Hampton, who's if you're going to take a running back in the first round, you better get value out of that dude. They will use the hell out of Omarion Hampton. He'll be a three down back for them. And he's going to get a ton of carries and they have a ton of catches. And like, he is a weapon for that offense. Trey Harris, who by the way is one of the cooler stories in the draft, guy that was ready to quit football. He was a quarterback in high school. Do you know this story, Anthony?
Mm-mm.
So he was a quarterback in high school and, he was ready to quit football and really dedicate himself to basketball. And his star wide receiver was like, bro, no. That star wide receiver was Malik Nabers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I have the right guy. let me confirm this real quick since I'm sitting here in the beast. I guess I can, let's see, Control F, Malik. Yep, I got the right guy. At OV Como High in Lafayette, Louisiana, he was teammates with Malik Nabers. Harris was like a brother and a mentor for Nabers. Wow. So he then switched, and the thing is, like, he was playing wide receiver initially as well, and their quarterback transferred, and they were like, hey Trey, we need you to play quarterback, and he did, and flex bone offense, but then eventually was convinced to stay in football by Malik Nabers, and it worked out for him. So cool story, and I think he's a good fit in there with Ladd McConkey, with Lambert Smith, and all of a sudden they've got some dudes to go. This pains me, Anthony, although I will kind of laugh at what happens 4 years from now when inevitably the general manager and team owner messes up some contract extensions for these guys. I really like the Cowboys draft, man.
Hey, they were one of my teams I have on my list, too.
And I don't know that. Like, the thing is, here's what I'll say about the Cowboys draft. I don't know how high the ceiling is for this draft.
ultimately, you took a guard at 12, a rotational edge rusher at 44, and a corner at 76. So those are your top 100 picks. There's a chance that corner's really good. There's a chance he's the biggest boomer bust guy. Siobhan Revelle, the corner out of ECU, 4.4 speed, good size, good length, good ball production, but played at ECU, and he's got some injury history, including an ACL last year. So, like, can he translate from the small school to the big time? How's the knee? Major questions. But if he doesn't get hurt and he has a year last year in 24 like he did in 23, he would have been a top 20 pick in this draft. And so the fact that you get him at 76 is excellent. Obviously, we've talked about Donovan Ezeraku a lot. Mm-hmm. There are some things about him that I have real concerns about. At 44, I would have been thrilled to get Donovan Ezeraku. He has a bag of pass rush moves. He's real explosive on the get off. He doesn't have the chase speed to be elite at the NFL level, likely, but he clearly has known how to chase guys down in college. He's got the production because he was the second leader in FBS and the highest sack getter in Power Four conferences in 2024. And then Tyler Booker, I mean, listen to that guy talk for 5 seconds, and it's hard to not love this guy. Offensive lineman mentality, great leadership skills, and I think fits with what they want to do offensively. Like, they want to let Dak drop back and cook, and this dude can pass block his face off, and he does some good stuff in the running game as well. So I think that's – I don't know as much about some of their later-round picks. You know, Jadon Blue is a guy that a lot of people like out of Texas. Texas has been a running back factory the past bunch of years. There's this amazing Photoshop of the Texas running backs when Bijan was still there. And there's like five guys sitting on the bench, and they did like a top photo, bottom photo. And they put, you know, top photo is the real one with all of them in their Texas jerseys. And it's literally five dudes all in their NFL jerseys now. And Jadon Blue is the latest on that list. Hat tip to the Cowboys. Will McClay continues to be one of the best in the business. And then you just wait for him to mess up the second contracts or let somebody go that they shouldn't, or Jerry to muck it up.
Yeah, I like Dallas as well. And I think, for the reasons you all just laid out, but the fact that they got three guys that were being mentioned, you know, to sort of kind of be in a first round mock grade, and Ezeraku and Siobhan Revelle, I think that just speaks volumes to the value in which they got these guys at. So shout out to Dallas. I mean, to be honest, the Giants also had a solid, you know, draft as well.
The thing is, like, I like the Giants draft as well. I like the Eagles draft as well. But the Giants, at least I can go, hey, why are you giving a coach that you're probably going to fire and a GM you're probably going to fire? Why are you trading future draft capital to take a quarterback for that staff? But if it works out and it saves their jobs and it's the right move, then, like, it's a genius move. So it's it comes down to efficacy.
Yeah. And then they also got Abdul, too, so. But the second team I also had that I was giving a hat tip to, the Patriots. Again, young quarterback surrounding that guy with some young talent, shoring up the offensive line. You get your guy Will Campbell at four, and then you also draft the center later. So you're going to have, you know, young offensive lineman to pair with your young quarterback. And then Trevion, who I really wish the Commanders could have got him, but him and Quinshon went back-to-back in the second round. But he's electric coming out the backfield. And then also they got Kyle Williams, who might not play a lot just because of they got Stephon Diggs. They got some guys in front of him. But I think down the road, he'll get some.
Yeah, people love that kid.
Yeah.
Like, he's explosive. And – I totally agree. They took their medicine where they needed to, going offensive line, getting Will Campbell, and Campbell's probably the safest player in the draft.
Yeah.
Will Campbell and Drake May are going to be teammates for 10 years. I don't know whether Will Campbell will be a guard or tackle, but those two are going to be together for a long time,
locked in.
Barring something stupid happening. But in terms of who they are, how they compete, and the talent they have, there's a chance they're going to be traveling to Pro Bowls together for a long time in New England. And then, you know, like you said, they get some extra weapons. Josh McDaniel has had a long history of, think of guys like Rashad White, and all the different James White.
Yeah.
Rashad White, also a good receiving back. But yeah. James White, the kid in New England, and all the other backs that have been really good.
Too.
Yeah. We'll see what they think of Ramondre Stevenson, but like they have a long history in that offense of backs who are really, really productive out of the pass game. And so Trevion Henderson, I think, is a great fit there. My last hat tip, and then we'll get to the head scratchers next. I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh,
for multiple reasons.
Talk to me, Craig. Talk to me.
First and foremost, they finally took their medicine on the interior of the offensive line.
Okay.
This is a team where John Schneider, their general manager, has literally said, like, we can find guards in the fifth round. And they looked at the first round and looked at Gray Zabel, the guard center out of North Dakota State, and said, that dude is way better than what we can find in the fifth round. And whether he is their center of the future or one of their guards of the future, that dude's going to be in the league for probably a long time, and they needed to address that position badly. They did. They then go get Nick Amanwori, who is built like Cam Chancellor, does not play like Cam Chancellor. However, get him in the building, see what he can do, see what Mike McDonald can get out of him. Apparently he and Cam have already been on the phone, so hopefully he can get some tips from the great Cam Chancellor, and maybe, you know, he's going to look like Cam in that uniform. The question is, can he play like Cam did? Elijah Arroyo, really good weapon as a tight end, for Sam Darnold or whoever is at quarterback. And speaking of, Torrey Horton is one of a lot of the draft Knicks favorite wide receivers, available still in the fifth round at 166, a guy that, had he not had some injury stuff, might have gone a lot higher in this draft. So I kind of like those guys, especially if you can get them late and in the fifth round at 166. That's excellent for a guy who's probably closer to a second or third round talent without some of the injury stuff. And then they took the biggest wild card in the draft, Jalen Milroe. Get him at 93. So they spent a top 100 pick on a backup quarterback. But if he works out, that guy could be really, really good, because his physical talents are so rare. And the thing is, unlike a lot of other quarterbacks in that bag, if he doesn't work out, he is actually good enough at running the football that he could be a bona fide NFL running back. He is sub-4.4 speed. He's big. He's strong. He's powerful. He's agile. Like, him as a ball carrier is worth drafting. And I think you find a role for him this year to supplement Darnold and, you know, some wildcat type of stuff. And then, Kenny, you work on his mechanics and be like, look, man, we don't need you to play, hopefully, for 3 years. Hopefully, Darnold works out for a couple of years for us here. But can we develop you as a passer and just totally break down your mechanics, start over, teach you how to throw the football accurately? And if so, maybe you found your quarterback of the future. And if it doesn't work, he's not useless. He can be a Taysom Hill type. And I think that's an interesting use of a third-round pick. And then they took they had a ton of picks late in this draft. At 6, 7 picks in the final, 130 picks of this draft. So took a bunch of dudes there, take a bunch of swings, see if any of them hit. So Seattle Seahawks, hat tip to you. Nice job. Who left us scratching our head? We'll get to our head scratchers next here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Excuse me, live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. Where Anthony, you know, earlier we were talking about Jeff Ulbrich and whether or not you've ever cost your dad $100,000 and getting fined in a single pop. Luckily, no. And luckily, you told the truth because your pops is watching today in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, he is. He is.
Shout out to Big Tony. What's up, Haney boy? All right, we're doing our hat tips and head scratchers, or head scratchers and hat tips for the NFL draft. We just gave our two hat tips teams, or a couple of hat tips teams that we liked what they did in the draft. Now time, Anthony Haney, for our head scratchers. Who's your first head scratcher team?
I'm going to have to go with the Houston Texans, to be honest. And I say them just because we saw what transpired when, you know, the Commanders acquired Laremy Tunsil. They lost out on him, and they also had other concerns on the offensive line that I thought they would address, you know, in the first round, like trying to go out here and either trade up for an offensive tackle or simply just get, you know, one of the tackles that falls to you. We ended up, you know, staying pat at 29, and guess what? We got our right tackle or our left tackle of the future, who knows what the
maybe,
Commanders.
Maybe both. Maybe he's a right tackle for 3-4 years, then he's a left tackle. We'll
exactly.
see.
And then we also saw the Chiefs, who had offensive line problems, specifically at tackle, draft an offensive tackle at 32. So the Texans trading out of the first round, and I mean, I credit them. You know, you end up acquiring more picks. You get some receivers in the second and third rounds to, you know, bolster your wide receiver room now that Tank Dell is hurt. But still, I think protecting CJ should have been of the most important thing on your agenda when it came to this draft. And they just made a head-scratching move trading out of the first pick and not taking Connerly or Josh Simmons. They did get one in the second round, but I still felt as though you should have taken, you know, the best player available at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you think of the player, right?
True.
If the Texans do not grade Josh Connerly the way the Commanders clearly did, where Adam Peters is like, I have to take this kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's so much higher value than where we are on the clock right now. We cannot believe he's here. Yeah, you made a mistake trading out. Yeah. If Adam Peters is wrong about Josh Connerly, I don't know the Texans made a bad move. So I think it's worth saying, like, this is a head scratch. It's one you stick a pin in. But at the end of the day, they wound up with four top 100 picks and another one at 116. They get one of the running backs there. And with those top 100 picks, they get Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, the two Iowa State receivers, which is kind of hilarious because there's a lot of talk about, you know, they're very different players, but like, which one do you want more? And now we're going to get the chance to see them both in the situation with Houston. And they needed receivers, right? They tried to bring in Diggs last year. It goes poorly, and then he tears his ACL.
Mm-hmm.
Tank Dell, I think you have to have questions about like his future with the amount he's been hurt and the seriousness of the knee injury that he suffered. And so you get Noel, who's kind of that type of player. You get Higgins, who might be more of a big slot type, but we'll see what he ultimately is. But those two go with Nico Collins. And you get Ariante Ursary, who a lot of people really, really like as an offensive tackle at the 48th pick out of Minnesota. He was OT5 on Dane Brugler's board behind Josh Connerly at OT4. So it just depends on what you think of the players. I think it is worth, you know, pointing out, like, yeah, there were two guys that a lot of people had really, really high grades on in Connerly and Simmons on the board, and they choose to go out. But I also wonder if they see the world or they see their offensive line world in the same way that the Commanders saw theirs last year, where they're like, we had scheme problems. We don't think our talent is as bad. And they've invested some in the offensive line previously, and they haven't gotten anything out of it because their O-line coach wasn't good, and Bobby Slowick clearly didn't know how to do a lot with that position either. And so I wonder if they look at it as we have scheme problems. We have development problems.
Yeah.
We actually don't know that we have a personnel problem. And there's a couple of, I'm trying to remember what team someone was talking about this, where similar thing, I think it was the Bengals, where there was like their defensive line, they've invested a ton in it and haven't gotten a lot out of it. And they're just like, we're going to go with the play better theory. Because we've now changed out coaches. You know, Lou Anarumo is a really good defensive coordinator, but his stuff is really complicated.
Yeah.
And so we have all these young players that we've invested in, and maybe we messed up on the players, but we think we might have messed up on the coaching, and we hope to get better play out of it. So we'll see on that one. My head scratcher that I'm going to go with, and this, I think this head coach and general manager deserve a lot of credit. So this is again. Interesting. Not like you definitely messed this up.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Vikings went into this draft with four picks. They ultimately are able to make five, but they stick at 24 and take Donovan Jackson.
Yeah.
Anthony, what happened to the 25th and 26th picks in this draft?
25th and 26th? Is that the Rams?
It's the Rams and the Falcons. The Falcons wound up at 26.
Oh yeah, so they get
with the Rams, and then 25 was the Texans that you just talked about.
Yeah,
and they both traded out.
Yeah,
you don't think Minnesota had offers to trade out at 24?
Oh, they definitely could have.
And Donovan Jackson was by most evaluations a second round pick.
Yep.
Why didn't you just trade back with the Giants and take Donovan Jackson there? And if you couldn't get Donovan Jackson, how different is he than the next guy that you could have gotten? Yeah. And maybe they specifically like Jackson. And this is where beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And if they're right and he allows them to change up what they're doing in their running game, which I think is something Minnesota wants to do, then this could be a fine pick. Like, it's hard to like royally screw up an offensive lineman in the first round, because typically offensive line is one of the easier positions to evaluate because the translation is more direct. There's less projection. And so even if a guy maybe doesn't become a top 10 player at the position, like if he becomes a better than average guard or tackle for them, and he's an answer for them that's reliable for a bunch of years, like, okay, fine. It's a fine pick. I just wonder, for a team that was so desperate, or should have been so desperate, to get more picks and to take a guy that I think most people had a little lower on the board, why you would take that guy there and not try to move back if he's the guy that you want all along.
Yeah.
So again, it's not, I don't think that outside of a team like Atlanta, where you're like, strategically, you have clearly made an error. And we talked about them on Monday. I think it's hard to like be like loser. I mean, even in Atlanta's case, like if it works out and they get two great edge rushers, like, they can deal with the champagne problems having to pay him in a bunch of years, but fine. I just, the players that they took at the position, and specifically Pierce trading in for him and giving up next year's one, considering you already took an edge, feels crazy. That's like a head scratcher where I'm like, my head's bleeding because I scratched so hard. But I think Minnesota's more along the lines of like, this doesn't seem like the most efficient use of your resources. Could you have done something a little better? A little smarter.
Yeah, I mean, that everybody's going to be monitoring the Falcons, because, again, back-to-back drafts, you make head-scratching moves. So we'll see if it pans out for those guys.
Right. And then same thing, you know, similar thing I would say about the Giants, right? You use future draft capital when your GM and your coach are on the hot seat. That's always a head-scratcher to me. Yeah. But I also don't mind the fit of the player in Jackson Dart. They also didn't give up a lot, frankly. Like, they gave away future capital, but not a lot of it. And if it winds up being the right guy, then cool. That'll work out for them. And congrats to Brian Daboll and Joe Shane for keeping your jobs somehow another year. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we are almost done, because the Nats and Phillies are just 15 minutes away from pregame beginning here on the Team 980. Nats on deck coming up. So let's get you wrapped up with real things and a little preview of the night's NBA action next. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. Nats on deck coming up at 6:15. They take on the Phillies tonight, which means Bryce Harper is, well, I guess he's hosting the Nats because they are in Philadelphia. And Bryce actually sat down with his old pal Charlie Slows. Bryce and Charlie chatting for about 7 minutes. Hear that conversation in Nats on Deck coming up starting at 6:15. That's very cool, Anthony. I'm intrigued to hear Charlie, who, by the way, what a voice. What a voice that guy has. Charlie Slows, the great Charlie Slows, with Bryce Harper coming up at 6:15. Tonight, Anthony, you are on Pins and Needles. Who's on bigger Pins and Needles, you or Vic? Vic about the Caps. Vic, the great slick Vic Ferreira just popped in the studio in the break. And he's like, we cannot have the Capitals lose tonight, because this gives me flashbacks to 2010 where they were up 3-1 on the Habs and blew the lead. And we cannot, no. Vic with a 3-1 lead, or your Lakers who are in a 3-1 hole?
I would probably say me, just because in 2010, the Capitals were the one seed as well. So history could very much well repeat itself. I'm going to knock on wood so it doesn't. But this is tough. I mean, LeBron's in year 40, though, man. He's in year 40. His team is reeling. There's not a lot of help off the bench. He's forced to do everything by his lonesome at 40 years of age against his young team and the Timberwolves. I think it's me, because LeBron doesn't have any help.
Well, there's no chance that you're – okay. First of all, settle down with no help.
All right, he has little help.
I would say little?
Little. All right, he has help to an extent.
He has Luka Doncic.
He does, but, you know, it's still 48 minutes. Two players can't get the job done by themselves.
Right.
they don't have a whole lot of help.
Okay, I should have rephrased that. They don't have a lot of help.
Yeah. The Capitals also have multiple games to play with. So obviously you're in the worst spot. I do feel like Vic is a little more nervous, but that's also just, that's you versus Vic as human beings. the Lakers tonight, I often ask people, I asked McDonough this earlier. Sean McDonough joined us at 4:30. He's calling the game for the Caps, on ESPN tonight. So you can check that if, flip back and forth between he and Joe B. What great options, we have to watch, with those two great broadcasters. But, asked Sean, I was like, what's something you're looking for early tonight that's like a tone setter type of thing that says, oh, the Caps came into this with the right mindset, knowing that the Canadiens are going to have the desperation. To me, if Luka comes out firing tonight, or LeBron, either way, I'm actually not like, this is a great sign for the Lakers. I know those two dudes are going to play desperate. I know that they're probably looking at JJ being like, don't you dare take us off the floor. I know that they are going to want it. I know they're going to give it their all. My question is, what about everybody else? And I actually think, like, and I don't know why this is what came to my mind. Remember Caitlin Clark's last game in college?
Yep.
She went, like, off her rocker in the first quarter. She had, like, 20 points in the first quarter of a college game. And South Carolina won the basketball game. It was just too much. You cannot possibly, like, she wasn't going to score 80. You needed others to get involved. And so we've seen that before in all kinds of different forms in basketball because the games are just so damn long.
We've seen it in this series.
To me, right, 100%. We saw it with Luka in game one, right? Well, I think it was game one, game two,
game
one of those
one,
two games.
Game like he's gotten off to quick starts in like a couple of the games and it's never been enough.
But the problem is when he does it the way he does it, it's a lot of isolation, and it's just not a sustainable way to play over the course of four quarters. Maybe it is for him for one game because he's that good, but it's not optimal. The optimal way to play is for the ball to move and others to get involved, and that way LeBron and Luka do not have to do it all, and they're not exhausted by the fourth quarter when they've played 46 minutes and they have to still create and against like lockdown defense against a team that is younger, fresher, and has a deeper rotation. And so I am looking tonight for the ball to move early, for LeBron and Luka to get their teammates involved, and then others to make plays on defense. If that happens, I think the Lakers have a great chance to win tonight, and then we'll see what happens in Game 6 and potentially Game 7. If not, over.
All it takes is one game, Craig. One game at a time. Let's go.
It does. I'm kind of intrigued, on the other hand, does Jimmy Butler come out and just rip Houston's heart out tonight?
If he does, man, they're going to be in for a rude awakening because we already know Steph.
We know if it's close
and fourth,
late.
My goodness.
Yeah, Curry's going to go bananas. So I'm excited because that's the early game. I get to watch.
What time is that one?
7:30. Because it's in Houston and the other game's in L.A.
Okay.
So we got the Rockets-Warriors game early. And then, you know, tomorrow morning I'll watch the Lakers T-Wolves because that's how I roll. But I'm excited to watch that one. Obviously I have the Caps on the other screen, as well. So going to be a fun sports night. All right. Last but not least, we wrap up the show with, Anthony, anything else you want to say about the games tonight?
No, I mean, I hope the Rockets win. That is actually what I'll say. I hope the Rockets win.
I hope they're left crying on their home floor. It's time for Real Things Real People Said in Real Microphones. Tomorrow, amazing story. Right before the show today, literally at 3:58, I was still on this interview. Esme Morgan from the Washington Spirit came on and has an amazing story. We'll play you the full interview tomorrow. But elsewhere in the women's soccer world, Lynn Biondolo, formerly Lynn Williams, and her boyfriend, or sorry, her now husband, Marley, who is a former reality TV star and is Australian, they were making a social media video about their dinner last night, and hilarity ensued. By the way, Marley is Australian.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite meals to make.
And delicious and nutritious.
And me and Sam talked about it on the podcast.
Salmon bowls?
Salmon bowls?
You and Sam talked about salmon bowls.
No, these aren't salmon bowls. This is just salmon.
Oh.
We talked about... Oh, bowls.
Bowls, yeah. We have never had an accent dilemma for the last 8.5 years. 9 maybe, and we met 10 years ago. And what in the hell was that?
They said salmon balls.
We're ending it here with our salmon balls. Love you guys.
Bowls.
Marley I thought he said balls as well.
Yeah. It was like a rolled up ball of salmon. That is a thing that people have. It's not what they were having. They were having a bowl with salmon in it. That's our Very Silly Radio Show. Nats on Deck is next. See y'all tomorrow.